Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
And this is another amazing thing that happens. trying to do a one-man show. I'm sure you've run into this a few times. So I just realized I didn't turn the sound on yet on the broadcast. But hey, at least I caught it in the first couple minutes and not after, you know, an hour of the show.
I mean, that was some of the best shit we've ever shared. I mean, I don't know. I don't think we can top that, really. It's a shame that everyone missed it.
Can we do it take two, or it's just not gonna be as good, right?
I don't know. You can only reveal the secret to life once, right? I mean, I don't know if it would have the same impact if we do it again, but I don't know.
Oh man. Well, let's at least give you a proper introduction with audio. Michael.
I could always do a mime or something.
Welcome. Welcome to the show. I've got Michael with me today.
How's it going?
Michael's actually he's traveling a very long way to be with us today, digitally, of course. He's sending his binary data a very long distance to be with us today.
All the way from UK, Scotland, up in Scotland. It's blowing a gale out there right now, but hopefully it's not coming through on the microphone. And yeah, happy to be here and sort of share my story and hopefully be a bit of a, you know, an insight to other people and just let them know that, you know, the word of liberty extends beyond the US, and the work that you're doing and other people like you is, you know, is reaching further afield. And I'm trying to kind of start the fire over here, I suppose. You know, there is a Libertarian Party here, but it's even lesser known than the one in the US, if that's something you'd be able to imagine.
Right.
I mean, it's probably, you know, if you type in Libertarian Party UK into Google, you'd probably have to get down to page 20 to find some reference to a BuzzFeed article that has a YouTube video with a Twitter post that actually references back to some Facebook comment from 10 years ago that says, yes, it does exist in the UK. But
right.
So anyway, I'm trying to fight the good fight and spread the word. And as you know, obviously I got you on my show the other day.
Is this one big Libertarian Party for the entire UK, or do you have your own for Scotland, or how does that work?
It's for the UK, yeah.
Okay.
It's the UK Libertarian Party. Yeah, they invited me. They did actually reach out towards the back end of last year and invite me to attend their conference, but I was actually away on vacation with my family at the time, so I couldn't attend. But they kind of expressly say on the website that, you know, we have got nothing to do with anarchy or anarchists or anything like this. So I was a bit like, oh, they're tight. Like, you know, let's just, I'll see. I'll do my own thing. You know, I'm kind of finding my way through this. It's fairly, you know, a new arena for me personally, having kind of started to get into all this more officially since sort of the middle of last year after my father passed away, which we might come on to sort of talking about. I didn't want to get too involved with the official party or anything like that until I'd kind of really formulated my own beliefs a bit more in a bit more of a concrete way.
Right. And that's interesting because I have the same kind of thing out here where, you know, I have, in some ways, I do kind of distance myself from the party to kind of promote my own message and that's the reason I have the whole taxation is theft thing, because I realized that, like, even within the party, there's, you know, everyone's got their own opinions of what the government should look like, what the world should look like, and where, especially with libertarians, nobody ever agrees on anything. So because of that, it's kind of like, you know, I feel like if what I'm doing is really trying to push a specific message and a specific type of thought, that if I were to do that within the Libertarian Party, then I would be to some degree speaking for everybody else, knowing that everybody else has a complete difference of opinions on, you know, on these different things. So it's, I don't know, it's, and then there's also a lot of pushback that comes with that too. Like, oh, you can't say that because that's not, you know, that's not a real libertarian.
Right.
Yeah. But I'm interested because, like, in, I've talked to, like, you know, a lot of people outside of the US where they still use the word liberal to mean what, like, the classic, they use the word liberal as classic liberal, which is kind of what libertarian is. How is that over in your area? Is that kind of the same thing?
Yeah, that's the same. I mean, the history of it is quite kind of complex if you get into the, particularly in the UK, the history of the political parties, and as you say, the denominations of each one, you know, the liberals and, you know, obviously it's entirely different sort of nomenclature, or however you say it,
right,
from the UK to US. But yeah, liberal from a UK standpoint isn't kind of, you know, the so-called snowflake, you know, kind of left wing as such. You know, it's historically is more about, you know, the individual's rights as opposed to, you know, believing in the power of the state and everybody getting a fair, you know, an equal share of all the money divided up kind of thing. So yeah, it's, you can get tripped up on these things thinking, you know, calling it one thing in one place and you know, using the same words in another place, and it can mean something entirely different.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting because there's, I mean, that's kind of the thing with anarchy, right? Anarchy is, it's kind of a bad word because the it's been redefined where really it just means no rulers, which is not necessarily like that's like what it literally means. But it's like we've come to create definitions on top of words. And what's interesting, I don't know how much of this happened. I'm sure this happens a lot in your legal system too, but like in our legal system, it's, they'll take words, like in the tax system, they use employer or employee. And so everyone's running around, oh, I'm an employee for this company and that company is my employer. But really when it comes to the tax code, those words don't mean it, like they don't mean that at all. Like an employer and an employee are specifically people who work for the government. And like they use like all this trickery to kind of manipulate us into, you know, paying taxes we're not supposed to and following laws we're not supposed to. And what's even worse about that is like when you get into like this whole like following laws that you're not supposed to, it's then like when you're in the belief that you were supposed to obey that law, even though that law doesn't apply to you, then when the government says, oh, we're going to punish you for breaking that law, you actually take that punishment as if what you did was wrong, when that law has absolutely no application on you as an individual. Right. And that's all done through definitions of just redefining words. It's amazing. I mean, it's evil, but it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's just one of the tricks of the trade that they have, isn't it? The kind of, as you say, obscuring words or hiding words and, you know, the meaning of words behind other words. And just the whole, I mean, any kind of legal document that you read, you know, any sort of government document that you read is purposely, from my opinion, is purposely obtuse and difficult to get to. What are they trying to say here? Like, nobody really, it's very transparent, it seems, the government. When you're trying to get an answer or you're trying to find out, you know, for example, I was doing some research the other day on what your rights are if you're stopped by the police in the UK versus what the rights are if you're stopped by the police in the US. And you can find information on it for the UK, but it is, I mean, I would spend hours and hours researching this stuff because you've got to try and, you almost need to, it felt like I needed to be a lawyer just to understand what they were saying. And this is on a public document that's supposed to, for the public, saying, look, this is your rights, this is the rights that you have, this is the rights the police have, this is the rights they don't have. But it wasn't in plain English. It took me several hours to set aside in that day to pick it to pieces, to get to the detail of it, to find out what my rights were as, you know, as a citizen here in the UK, when the police try and stop me or question me or turn up at my house or anything else. You know, it's one of the tools that they use is to bury all the information that we need that would kind of set us free and make it, oh, right, so it's that. They bury it so that it's complex and so that the man on the street just thinks, oh, well, I'm sure they know what they're talking about. I'm not going to read all. It's the same as, like,
right,
you know, contracts, terms of, yeah, oh, I'm sure it's fine, I'll sign it. I mean, there was a guy in the UK, this is breaking news today, who was quarantined for the as a result of coronavirus, and he was quarantined for 2 weeks, and he did sign something to go into this quarantine, but he's now kicked off and said, I don't want to remain there. I think I'm fine. I think the risk is overblown. He's been trying to get out of this quarantine center. So today in the UK, they have they put out a new sort of addition to the law, a new power, meaning that it's now being, the coronavirus in the UK has now been listed as an immediate and severe threat. Even though there's only 8 cases out of a global 40,000 in the UK, and nobody's obviously died in the UK. But they put this in place, apparently, specifically to stop this guy from leaving the quarantine thing, and just, you know, more kind of dumping more regulation on top of, you know, what had already existed to, you know, in this example, in my mind, is overkill. You know, it's kind of like they see any kind of crisis or emergency and think, right, they're kind of rubbing their hands like, okay, what can we infringe now? How can we push this further? Like the other week in the UK, I mean, the stop and search rules here in the UK are ridiculous. You guys, your toes would curl. Here in the UK, the police can stop and search you if they have probable cause. Obviously, that's determined by the police and justified by the police. So, oh, of course they're going to come up with something. But as if that weren't enough, now they've been given powers where they can actually stop and search anybody without any cause, without any suspicion. They don't have to tell you why they're doing it. They don't have to tell you what they think they're going to find. They don't need any reason at all. They can stop you. And if you don't agree to it, they can arrest you. And they can put this power in place if, and again, it's down to their judgment, if they think something might occur, like if they think there's going to be an outbreak of violence. So, like, you know, they go all Minority Report and say, oh, let me, pre-crime, I think there's going to be an issue in this area, therefore we'll put in this special power and we're going to stop all these people. They did it the other week in Wales. They don't do it in Scotland, fortunately. It only applies to England and Wales. We did it in Wales because there was a couple of knife attacks. Nobody was killed. Guys are going to get out of hospital, but 2 people were attacked. And because of that, they put this special power in place. And they stopped and searched 70 people in this city in a weekend. Massive cost, obviously, to the taxpayer of doing that. Massive hassle to all the 70 people. They found 1 knife, about 4 grand's worth of cocaine, and about 2 grand in what they thought was illegal cash, or whatever illegal cash is.
Right.
Cash that's not in the pocket of the government, presumably.
Yeah.
And that was the result of stopping searching 70 people and infringing against their rights, you know, and put this power in the guise of, oh, you know, we're serving and protecting you. And it's like, well, and they don't even work. Studies have been done by the government themselves in the UK and by the police themselves in the UK. And these stop and search powers do not reduce crime. When they rolled out this additional power, it actually dropped the amount of crime that it was finding. You know, when they did more of the stop and searches, they were finding on average less crime percentage wise than they were when they were doing it before. So yeah, crazy. And as I say, if you try and work this out, you try and get to the bottom of it, it takes a lot of time to delve, as you say, delve through all the government literature and language to actually find, you know, what your rights are in all this.
Right. Now, what kind of stuff were you reading? Because I know that, like, a lot of the things that I've seen are, there's the law, which in many cases are, like, ridiculously complicated, but those are the ones that are trying to screw us. The ones that try to benefit us, like we have the Bill of Rights, are usually pretty short and pretty easy to read. Like, you know, you have the right to free speech, and that you know, they can't infringe that. They can't pass any laws against it. It's almost plain English. But then, you know, then if you go to like a government site that says what you can and can't actually do, where does your freedom of speech actually begin and end? That's where you start getting like, it's not actually like that free speech amendment that you're reading. You're reading like not even court interpretations, just police basically saying, oh, on our website, in this city, you can do this and you can't do this. And they don't even point to a specific law that they have that you know, that validates that.
And so
I think that, you know, when you have a simple thing that says you have freedom of speech, but then you have all these other rules that like kind of cloud that circumstance, then it's like it's almost like people think they have the freedom of speech, but they become afraid to actually speak, which in the eyes of the government, job well done, because we didn't have to stick a gun in their face and say you're not allowed to talk. We just made them too afraid to talk. And so they've effectively taken away the freedom of speech using fear instead of passing a law. And I think that's, you know,
yeah, I mean that. Yeah, Edward Snowden has basically got a good quote about, I can't remember the exact quote, but basically saying, you know, if people are surveilled, if people are observed, they lose their freedom, even though they're not on free, as it were. It's that sense of being watched. There's this theory of this thing called a panopticon. I don't know if you've heard of this. Mm. I was looking into this. I'm kind of well into the sort of surveillance culture in NSA, and I've done a lot of reading on that area as well. And there's this thing called the panopticon, which was created. It's an architectural idea from the 19th century. And the idea is it's for a prison, and you have a tower in the middle with one guard. And around the tower in a circular shape, you have all the cells. So one guard can look at all the cells simultaneously. So that was one aspect. It was a labor-saving thing, because you just have one guard up high, presumably with a gun, looking at all the people in the cells. But the second powerful thing about this, which is where it links to surveillance of the state, is you can't see the guard in any of the cells. It's, you know, one-way glass or one-way mirror. He can see you, but you can't see him. So you don't even know if there's anybody in there or if he's looking at you. But the studies show, obviously, that if you think you're being observed, you will behave differently. Like you said, you will not say things as you wanted to say. You won't act like you wanted to act. You won't fully be able to be free in every area of your life if you think somebody's watching you. And that's obviously what they try and do, you know, with these laws and with these, you know, things that they're trying to pass through, freedom of speech, and the, you know, that new bill they were trying to pass through, obviously in Virginia, was it Bill 1627 about, you know, harassment, and you can't use bad language. If you use bad language, you can be done for a misdemeanor. And like, what? I mean, it's, as you say, over here, we've got, you have the right to freedom of speech. Okay, great, I understand that. Excellent, let's go to town and say what the fuck we want or whatever. Oh, but now we're saying you can't swear and we can't use this kind of language. What? Where? How is that even possible? How can I even float that idea? It seems ridiculous. And I know when that bill first was kind of put forward, people saying, oh, you know, it's infringing freedom of speech. And other people say, no, it's I've checked it on Snopes. That's the classic thing. Like, oh, I've done a fact check on Snopes and Snopes says it's not true. It's like, well, if you go and actually read the bill itself, it totally is true. It totally is true that you can be done for a misdemeanor now with electronic communication if it includes lewd or lascivious, which I think is like sexual language, or any kind of language like that. It doesn't matter if, you know, what you're saying, if you use language like that, according to that bill, you can be hit with that misdemeanor and whatever. That's an infringement on what you're saying and how you're saying it in any. It doesn't matter how they spin it or how deep into the bill when you read it, they hide it. It's preventing me from saying what I want to say.
Yeah, and it's, you know, a lot of that comes down to interpretation too, right? Because, you know, like either they're going to have to write a specific list of words into the bill, which then makes the bill itself, if you were to print a copy of the bill, you'd be violating the law.
If they read it out, yeah, that would be hilarious to see that. Yeah.
But it's like, it's either that or you just leave it up to interpretation. Oh, well, you said a word and it had four letters in it. So, you know, and it's like, oh, really? But the word that I said was wall. Wall has four letters in it. I'm not allowed to... And, you know, especially in today's culture, like, oh, well you use the word wall in the context of Trump and his anti-immigration. So that's offensive. So that's now like really, when they make these laws that broad, then they can be abused like that. And even when it's like. Like, it's okay, because a lot of people will say, oh yeah, but that's never going to happen. Police aren't going to go walking around like, oh, I heard him say the word wall, he's under arrest. No, that's not what they're going to use it for. What they're going to use it for is if there's somebody they don't like. I'll give you an example. I have a friend who was, he was a criminal defense lawyer, right? So he was helping people getting arrested for drug charges. He was helping them get out of jail, right? He was fighting their charges. He was winning. He's really great at it. And so that's his job as a lawyer, is to make sure these people don't go to jail. And they shouldn't have, like a lot of people like us will agree, they shouldn't have been going to jail in the first place because they weren't harming anybody. This was an actual crime. But because he was doing such a great job, the government hated him. And so now this person is, he's basically in prison. He's still, I think he's still awaiting sentencing. He's going to get up to 30 years. And for things like he basically had a client who was involved in the drug trade, and his client paid him, and the money laundering laws are supposed to be there to prevent drug people from laundering their own money and spending it, but apparently you can't hire a lawyer with that money either. And so it's absolute nonsense, because, and here's the worst part about it. It's okay. You didn't ever convict the guy that gave him the money of being a drug dealer. So how is him receiving that money receiving drug money? Because they never even charged the guy and convicted him. So it's like, this is like the vagueness of it all. And you know, this guy, he's just, as they say, just doing his job, just following the law, just trying to help innocent people not get charged, or at least, you know, minimize the charges, minimize the time they're going to spend in prison, that sort of thing. And when the government does not like you, they will use whatever at their disposal against you. That's just the nature of what they do. You look at Chelsea Manning, you look at Edward Snowden, and like they're using whatever laws they can do. Look at Trump. I mean, love him or hate him, look at what they're trying to do with the impeachments by just trying to say like, oh, we're going to take this kind of obscure law and some really vague evidence. I mean, really, they could have charged him with war crimes already and been done with that. But of course the Democrats don't want to do that because they're all guilty too, and that would open a whole can of worms for them. So they try to find these like obscure laws and just try to apply them any way that they can. And you know, if you don't have $1 billion to fight it, you're probably going to lose.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, particularly that one, say they were trying to get through in Virginia about harassment. Again, it's all open to interpretation. It's like, you know, when the police go and investigate a police, you know, a sort of police misjustice or whatever, the police investigate, and lo and behold, they don't find anything.
Yeah,
it's the old meme. But yeah, the bill in Virginia, it's again, you think, I mean, one of the lines in there, it says something, it goes something like, you know, you're not, you can get hit with a misdemeanor if you post anything, you know, deemed immoral. And I was like, well, what? It was like a rewind moment. Let me just check that again. All right, so the government is going to judge what is moral and what is immoral. That's classic. I mean, what? These are the guys that, you know, go off, steal all our money, go in foreign intervention programs, put through laws, imprison people that have not harmed anybody, you know, bomb tens of thousands of civilians. You go marauding across the globe. Oh, you're going to judge what's moral and decide whether I'll be hit with a misdemeanor based on something I've posted on the interwebs. Yeah, great. I mean, it's just,
right.
And again, it's that catch-all thing so that they can, theoretically, just anybody could be tarred with a brush. They now widen in the scope of this so much that nobody is beyond the radar. Nobody's is out of gunshot of this, because they could get anybody, you know, because you and I could look at a meme, right, of you know, like, for example, I got a meme taken off Instagram, my Instagram account, the other day. It was the Cat in the Hat with a cartoon baseball bat, and it got removed from Instagram for violence.
Wow.
It's just like a screenshot of a kid's movie, right? But, and that's just Instagram. But yeah, these laws could interpret that and say, well, no, that's immoral what you've done there. You've got a picture of, you know, Governor Northam's head there. You've got the Cat in the Hat bashing it with a cartoon baseball bat. You're actually making a threat on his life. It says it here in this bill. So we're going to come after you. And you and I know, well, it's not, it's for laughs and giggles. You know, it's people are laughing. I'm not actually going to dress up as Cat in the Hat. I don't have a red and white striped baseball bat that I'm going to, you know, squeak him over the head with. It's a joke, guys. But the laws that they write are so far reaching that anybody can fall under their remit now, because it's down to them, as you said, to decide what's right and wrong. You know, they've taken it upon themselves to say, well, no, we're the ultimate judge of character and morality now. So, you know, we'll say what goes and what doesn't.
Right. And you have to pile that on top of just like a really terrible justice system that they have. Like, there was, you know, because most of these guys don't understand technology or anything, which in some cases is worse than others. So there was this case in the US where, probably like back in the 90s, I don't know what they did. They probably set up like a honeypot, right? That had some kiddie porn on it. And so the police are like, any IP address that downloads from here is obviously downloading kiddie porn. So we're going to go after him. So they got an IP address. They were like, okay, it's this guy. We're going to go to his house. They went to his house. They arrested him. They got his computer. They checked his browser history. They checked his computer. They couldn't find anything. There was no evidence of him doing anything. And this guy was getting ready to go to jail for this, like 10 years, 20 years, whatever they do. And this guy was like, I'm innocent. I've never done that. I've never looked at any of that kind of stuff. And the government's like, well, it came from your IP address. How else do you explain it? And I don't know, like, this was going on for like months, and like his lawyers were just trying to defend it because nobody understood the technology. Well, what it turned out was that he had a Wi-Fi network back in the day before, like, they came, you know, pre-programmed with passwords and everything. And one of his neighbors was on his Wi-Fi network, and his neighbor was doing it.
Right.
And it's like the government was just so sure, but it went to your IP address. So nobody could have possibly used your IP address. Like, they don't understand the technology. So when you start looking at them creating laws around social media and all this other stuff, it's like, it's always going to happen. And it might even be with the best of intentions. Like, you know, with this guy, you're like, yeah, kiddie porn's bad. And anyone who's downloading it, okay, yeah, throw him in prison. I'm not going to complain about it. But for them to basically say, well, we don't really have any evidence, we're just gonna lock you up. But then it gets even worse, because it's like, knowing that these laws exist, and really that's all it takes. You just need to have one file on your hard drive, because so you're telling me I can make friends with somebody, work my way into their house when they're not looking, get onto their computer, save one file, copy it from a USB stick, or just plant the USB stick on their desk, and all of a sudden now they're a felon.
Right, right.
And it's this is the same thing with drugs too. Like, I've heard so many cases of this one was interesting. This guy, true story, lent his car to his son. His son's driving around with his friends. His friends have a little bag of weed in his pocket, and it falls out of his pocket. The son returns the car to his dad. The dad's driving around. He gets stopped with the police, and they say, for some reason, can I search your car? And the dad's like, well, I have nothing to hide. I've done nothing wrong. Of course you can search my car. He finds the weed. The dad gets charged. He asks his son, and basically because there was more than one kid in the car, unless they know who they're going to charge, they can't just say, well, it was one of theirs. We're going to let you go. No, you're going to jail unless you can find out which one of those kids had it. And right. that's absolute nonsense. But, you know, it fits with the letter of the law, so it's okay. It's insane.
Yeah. And plus, the origin of that is obviously don't let them search your car. I mean, you don't have, you know, they have no right to search your car unless they have a bit of paper that says they can do that in the US, which is one of the, one of the main things that people trip up on, particularly in that example. If you've got a rental car and you think, oh, yeah, it's fine. I'm totally innocent. Yeah, go for it. Well, A, it can take several hours to search a car. Right. It can be a major pain in the ass. Plus, they can find whatever they want or, who knows, plant it. I'm sure there's several instances of that. We all know that there's bad cops out there that have done that. You just don't let them search. You just remain calm. You're not trying to kick off or you create some sort of viral video of you bad-mouthing a policeman or whatever. You just say, well, no, I don't consent to that, and just see where it goes because they've got no right. Same as here in the UK, there's this kind of sort of an unwritten belief or an unwritten law amongst the public that if the police say, look, you come sit in the police car, you've got to go do it. But you don't. It's not a law. You do not have to do that. If you've been arrested, obviously it's different. But if they just question you, they've got anything that they want to do that's not an arrest, you don't have to get in the car. But they don't tell you that. Obviously, they don't tell you you've got a right not to go in. And they'll resist it because they want to get you in there so that they can turn the screws on you. You want to get out because obviously general public's walking past looking, oh, look at that guy in the back of the car, what's he done? But you don't have to get in. But again, they rely on this sort of lack of knowledge and lack of understanding. And as you said, it's kind of that fear as well of authority. Oh, right, they must have my best interest at heart. They must know what they're talking about. I better get in the car. I better let them search my car. I better let them pat me down. I better let them in my house. No, no, and just no again. You know, it's unless they've got paper with your name and address on it or whatever or reason whatever, then no, just I don't consent and I'm not saying anything. I'm not answering any questions. You know, and I've got nothing to hide, but I don't care. I'm not. You know, it's my right to do that and say that.
Right. Yeah, it's your right to not be inconvenienced at the very least. But, you know, something you said like about, you know, somebody driving by and seeing you in the car and what has that person done? My lawyer friend actually pointed this out because he's asked this to juries before. He says, when you drive by and you see somebody being stopped by the police and they have to get out of their car, do you think to yourself, do you ask yourself the question, oh, wow, what did this guy do to get arrested? Or do you ask the question, I wonder what this guy is being illegally charged with or unlawfully accused of or irrationally accused of? Right. And it is that there's like that stigma that like, oh, well, he must have done something because I'm driving on the same highway and I didn't get stopped. But yeah, you don't have to be. And you know, to your point about the police, I've been stopped and, you know, there was this one guy, he was like, can I search your car? And I said, no. And he said, why not? And I was just like, because this is one of the things, like they know a lot of people are going to say no. And I'm like, I was totally unprepared for that question. Why not?
Right.
And I was just like, because I don't have time for that. But it's like he could have come back with like, well, it won't take that long. And then it's like, what am I like? And it's like, no, but I saw this, you know, this one that's getting really popular is just I don't answer questions. So when they ask why not, just say I don't answer questions. Because it's
right.
Like it's that like we've all gotten into these stupid arguments. Well, why not? Well, why not? And it's like I don't have to answer all these stupid questions. What did you stop me for? And what are you looking for?
Right.
And what do you and here's another thing, like they're trained. I mean. Okay, they're trained to like, we want to get into your car, right? And we know we can't do certain things. So these are all the different things we can say. And so they are trained on things that they can say that is going to trick you into consenting to a search that you don't need to consent to. And it's really important to understand this, because they'll you know, oh well, you're not hiding anything, are you? And they'll even go so far as to say things like, well, I have the right to search your car at this point because I've observed something, something, something. But if you give me consent to search your car, so if it's okay with you, I'm just going to go ahead and search your car. They're trying to convince you that they can search your car anyway, which they can't. That's why they're asking you they're just like trying to get you to get right. to say yes, making you think they can do it anyway. Even making you think like, oh, well, if you just get out of my way and let me search, then I won't take you to jail. But right now I could just take you to jail and then search your car. It's, you know, we really need to be like, oh, really? Can you really, like, because the Supreme Court in the US anyway says that a police officer can lie to you in order to get a confession. So that means they're allowed to tell you that they can search your car when they can't, in order for you to say, okay, go ahead. And that's considered legal. And it's like, wait a minute, you're defrauding an American citizen who you're supposed to be protecting so that you can violate his rights with an illegal search. And the courts are okay with this. It's absolute nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And like you say, you know, once they've stopped you, that's, you know, their clock's ticking, obviously. They've got to do something within a certain time frame. I think it's 15 minutes, is it, in the US? I believe you that they've got to, you know.
It varies. Like,
right.
Because, like, so, here's the other thing. They'll say, like, they're technically not supposed to make you wait for, like, a drug dog to show up. But they'll, you know, they'll do. I've been stopped for like over an hour before, really? You know, refusing okay. to answer questions, and they're just like, "Oh, my computer's not working. Your information's not coming up," and you know, all kinds of nonsense. And it's, you know, they find. And what can you do? You go to sue the police, and it's like, if you were first, the courts aren't even going to let that case in. But if you were to ever even get it to a jury, the jury's just going to be like, "Okay, so the cop held you on the side of the road for 30 minutes." When the limit's 15 and you want to sue him for $100,000, which is ultimately going to come out of my paycheck because I got to pay. I'm paying the government right. doesn't have any money. They're paying with my money. It doesn't go anywhere. So what, like, there's no consequences for the police breaking the law. The consequences are the taxpayers have to pay. And that makes absolutely no sense. But they're just totally protected.
Yeah. Yeah, it's totally crooked. And obviously geared in their favor, as you say. There's nothing you can do. We can dig our heels in as best we can, know our rights and try and defend them. But yeah, beyond that, you know, we just got to roll with the punches that were dealt, really, when it, you know, when these things crop up.
So tell me more about, like, what's going on in your neck of the woods. Like, what's what is the government like out there? Are they really out and harassing? Is it limited to a small number of cases? Is the government growing, or do they really, you know, stop and issue a lot of traffic citations or bother people for, you know, fines and penalties for like every little thing? Like, what's it really like out there?
Yeah, it's kind of weird, because I've seen it from both sides. You know, I've seen it as a kind of statist in the previous life. Oh, this is not, you know, everything's not too bad. What was everybody complaining about? But when you start looking into it and you have the, you know, the aha moment, and you kind of open your eyes for the first time, you kind of see that you've not really had any really semblance of freedom at all. I mean, obviously you've got, you know, gun control in the UK. So, you know, we can't defend ourselves. So I can't really defend my property at all. I can't really get a weapon unless it's for a sporting purpose. I can't have a pistol. It's illegal to own a handgun in the UK. So there's that. The police, you will see them out and about on the roads. You know, there are unmarked cars regularly trying to catch people doing speeding. There are speed cameras on all major roads. Average speed cameras now, so you've got to stick on that certain speed over a 40 or 50 mile journey. There's a camera, you know, every 3 miles.
Oh, is this where, like, they're like, so if you go like 100 miles down the road, they know how long it took you to get from one camera to the next?
Yeah, no, they place them every few miles. You cannot go over the speed limit at any point during this 40, 50 mile stretch. Because there's like, I don't know, 15 cameras, say, or 20 cameras in that stretch. So it's an average in between each segment. So you might think, oh, well, I'll totally floor it between this junction and this junction. They'll still get it. Wow. So that's going on. Obviously, you've got the traditional speed cameras with the flashes and so on. And I say unmarked cars. And, you know, if you do any journey in around a major city or on a major road in the UK, anything over half an hour, you'll see at least one speed camera. I mean, they're just all over the place, you know, cashing in, you know, 24/7, not obviously unmanned, revenue source for the government. Obviously the UK is also a butt of all the license jokes. You know, have you got a license for that? Have you got a license? You know, you've got to have a license for TV, for fishing and all this stuff. I mean, there's an advert, I was listening to radio the other day, one of these scary adverts. The government's really just love scaring the bejesus out of people over here. So there's a famous advert, you can go Google it in London, that was like Big Brother. It said, "We are watching." And it had pictures of eyes in the sky. It said, "Big Brother is watching," or "London is watching. We are watching you." And it was done in that kind of 1950s style. And when you first see this, you're like, there's no way that's real. But it was real, right? It was paid for by government. It paid for this campaign.
Wow.
All these CCTV cameras, but actually portraying the campaign in the style of, yes, we are Big Brother and we are watching you. This radio advert was, it was a woman pretending to be sat-nav, right? So she goes, turn left. At the next turn, you will see five cars that have been impounded because they were not taxed. At the next junction, turn right, and you will see three vehicles which are being towed away for being untaxed. And it carries on like this for a few minutes, and it says, if you don't have a taxed vehicle, we will find you. Tax it or lose it. And this is the this is national advertising that they put out on radio. They do the same for TV licenses. So you might walk down your street or into your town, like a small town, not a big city, small town, and you'll see this huge billboard. I've seen these before. Let's just say you live at Jones Road, right? You live on Jones Road. You walk into town, you see this big billboard. There are three properties on Jones Road that do not have a TV license. We are coming. Make sure it's not you.
Wow.
So you're like, it's great.
Tell me about this TV license, because I've heard about this, and like, it's almost inconceivable. Like, I'm picturing, like, because if you get cable TV or something, then it's like, why wouldn't they just tax the cable? But is this only for receiving air networks what is this?
I know. When you start to look at this, you're like, what the hell is going on here? It started traditionally as a tax on the terrestrial, you know, the old school channel, the BBC. So that the kind of the British Broadcasting Corporation, you had to have a TV license to watch that channel. Now, back in the day, there were only sort of two or three channels. There were two BBC channels and there was an ITV independent television. You could watch that without a license, but obviously every TV picked up all three channels, right? So you couldn't say, I've got this TV and I'm not watching the BBC channel, which the license is for, because it's able to receive that channel. Therefore, if you had a TV and no license, you'd be hit with a fine. Now, to be honest, I don't know how they justify it now, because it is still technically for that one channel. And there is a lot, it's still a very popular channel, despite Netflix and Amazon and the hundreds of prime channels, you know, the BBC One, BBC Two, and all the other channels that have now sprung out of that, paid for by the taxpayers. Is a very popular channel. Like Top Gear, for example, comes from BBC. You know, the period drama, the name of which escapes me, I've never watched the thing, but it's, you know, it's another massive export from BBC. So there is a lot of stuff on there. So I don't know, they still hold it over people, and you're not able to own a TV that can receive that channel or those channels unless you have a license.
I mean, like, okay, because this is what blows my mind. Okay, first of all, they shouldn't be taxing that. But I'm just like, okay, let's say I was working for the government and I believed in taxes. There are so many ways that make so much more sense that would cost so much less. Like, you tax the TV when it's sold, or you tax the company that's actually doing the broadcast. Is it like a state-owned broadcast? Is that why they're...
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
So they can't tax the broadcaster because that's who's making the money. Okay, so you sell the TV and you tax the TV. But then, like, I also want to know, like, has anyone ever gone to court and said, well, I don't have to pay that tax because I don't watch that channel, and you have the burden of proof to prove that I've been watching this channel without a license because I don't want to pay for that channel if I haven't been watching it? Like, I wonder if anybody's ever challenged it to that degree, or if it's... Because, like, here's the thing with traffic tickets in the U.S., right? Most people, even when they think they're innocent, I wasn't speeding, they go in and they're like, I don't want to deal with it. Let me just pay the fine and be done with it. I don't want to come back to court. I don't want to have to miss all these days of work. So, like, do people, when people get caught with having a TV without a license, do they... like, and like, I mean, do the police come in and turn the TV on and, like, does it work? Or can you say, like, well, I lost the remote, so I can't even turn it on? So, like,
well, it
just blows my mind.
Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, obviously they do tax, you know, they tax everything, as you know. I mean, there's just any reason for a tax, obviously, you know, sales tax on the TV itself, and, you know, a tax to watch that particular channel or whatever. I'm sure people have gone to court. I don't know specifically of it. I think, you know, as technology advances, it would be harder and harder for them to justify, you know, doing this when there are so many different avenues to watch TV now. You know, I mean, you can watch TV without a TV, obviously. You know, you watch it on your phone. You watch, you know. So I don't know how they keep it going, apart from it's, you know, the whole boiling a frog thing, and, you know, half the citizens are, you know, in the warm water and it's getting progressively hotter. But, oh, well, it's fine. You know, feels okay to me. It's nice and warm. But yeah, it's just yet another example of governments taxing people.
How much is this tax, out of curiosity? How does that work?
You might be asking the wrong person, but I wouldn't be able to say it. I wouldn't be able to say on video. It's probably... I think it's like $100 a year or something like that.
Wow.
What I really used to hack me off.
I mean, that's like a Netflix subscription, but it's only like one channel.
right. I mean, they'll even hit students with it as well. So, like, when you're at university, if you had a TV in your halls of residence and there's like 12 of you and it's a crappy TV, you know, this is back in the day, you know, it's like 20 years ago and the TV's just, you know, weighs the same amount as a car, but it's like a screen, you know, like 3 inches across or something. And they would even tax that, you know, you didn't get any dispensation even as a student. So, you know, you're always on the lookout, and they would go around campuses, you know, they had a specific truck that would go around, apparently, that would be able to pick up whether or not you had the TV on. They would be able to pick up a signal from it, and they would go raid student campuses, because obviously students have got loads of money. Everybody knows that. I mean, it's like one of the most well-known facts, right? I mean, the students are the richest people on earth.
Right.
So, yeah, they would drive around. So you'd always be on the lookout as a student. You'd always, you know, watching the TV, but obviously one eye on the road, just in case one of these vans comes around to try and get, you know, 60 quid off you or 100 quid off whatever it was. But crazy.
Wow. That's...
I don't
like, I mean, like, because, I mean, look, you've got, like I said, I'm a techno nerd, right? So I'm thinking about, like, you've got Dish Network, like all the satellite companies, right? And
right,
they obviously want you to pay to watch their channels, but they're not going door to door trying to see who has a TV. They come up with better technology that prevents you, like, you know, you need like a box that has like a decryption algorithm in it. And the last time I saw them, they had like these little cards that you had to stick in. So when you buy your subscription, you stick the card in, and when you don't have the card, there's no way you can decrypt it. And they were always updating the algorithms and trying to figure out a more advanced. And it's like, guys, why don't you just do that? But it's like, no, the government mentality is, no, we need to have police going around doing things. No, we don't want to stop people from stealing. We want to take money from people when they do steal.
Right.
We want to steal. Like, we want to. Yeah, it's absolutely insane.
In answer to your question, how bad is it over here? I mean, it's bad. I mean, there are infringements going on all over the world, obviously. And, you know, there's always somebody worse off and always somebody better off. But when I, you know, every day now that I'm, you know, doing my podcast, I'm researching each of these different areas, police and, you know, taxation, all these different things, drug laws. I'm researching them from a UK and a US perspective. And it's always in the UK, I'm always like, oh God, you guys are going to get a kick out of how bad it is over here. But then at the same time, that's really why I got into this, was to almost issue a warning shot across the pond to say, look what's gone on here. Because, you know, I'm sure the US government, you know, behind closed doors is saying, look how good the UK right. government has got that under control. Like the surveillance thing, you know, they've got a full, what they call a full tank system over here in the UK. Like every piece of digital information that originates in the UK is stored permanently, everything. Wow. So whatever you watch, read, buy, click on, type online, any communication, this communication, everything in the UK is stored permanently, absolutely everything, because of our size. And I'm sure other governments will look at that and say, oh, can we do that? Like, I want one of those that, you know, we've right. got everything on everybody forever. I kind of look at the UK situation, sort of talk about that to a US audience and kind of revel in their amazement and shock. But also it is a kind of a warning, I guess, that this is how bad things could get.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, I want to get, I want to hear about your book, your ebook in a minute. But first I want to ask just what's real quick kind of a breakdown on, like, what's your income tax like? What's your property tax like? What's your, I don't know, what are kind of the main taxes you have out there? What are your car taxes like? Driver's license fees and all that?
Right. Well, hold on to your underpants, Kale. So I pay, I probably pay about 40% of, in income tax, okay, on what I earn as an individual, because I run my own business. I'm also obviously subject to corporation tax. So my business is taxed on its profits. I then take money out and I'm taxed on the money that I take out, which has already been taxed. So there's that. I've got an Audi A6, right, which is an estate car, just to give you an idea of. To fill that with petrol, to fill that with gas in the UK, costs me about $100 to fill that.
Wow.
Yeah. My wife's got a Q, what's it called? A Q7 Audi, which is a big car. That's like $150 to fill that, fill the tank. And half of that is tax. Half of that cost of the fuel is tax. You've got to pay road tax. So on my Audi A6, which again, it's not like a sports car. It's a, you know, it's a decent fast car, but it's not like, you know, it's not a total gas guzzler. But for that, I would pay about $400 a year road tax for the privilege of using the roads, the MER roads. The driving license, I don't think. So the best of my memory, I don't think we pay for that. We might pay a nominal fee to get it renewed every so often. They're probably sticking it up my ass some other way,
right,
and making me feel good about the fact I've got a free driving license.
Well, if you have two cars, they figure they can charge you twice, right? So
they charge twice. Yeah, double the road tax.
Even though you can only use one at a time.
Right. Well, yeah, it could potentially be out there damaging the roads and everything else. So yeah, they've got to get their money somehow.
Yeah.
But yeah, one of the worst that I was kind of, well, I wasn't really victim to it. It didn't affect me directly. It didn't affect my income or revenue, but it was the death tax, basically. So last year, June last year, my father passed away. And just to give you a bit of background, because it's relevant to the taxation component of this, my dad had worked all his life. He was a teacher. He'd worked really hard all his life for about 40 years, full-time employment, always thrifty, saving money, saving, looking out for his family and putting money away. And he was healthy as well. On the outside, he wasn't taking any medication. He wasn't having any ailments or anything like that. And it came as a real big shock when he died from what turned out to be a heart attack at 75. Because we all thought he'd have at least 10 years left in him. He was active. He didn't drink. He didn't smoke. You know, he would do exercise every day. He would eat right, eat a good diet and all this stuff. So it was a big shock. So that was bad enough. But it then turns out that we didn't really fully understand just how hard he'd been working and how much he'd been putting away. It turned out he'd put away a lot, like to the tune of about $500,000 and $600,000 he'd managed to save on a teacher's salary, which is frankly pretty incredible. And obviously, in order for him to make all these investments, he was very astute. He would always, you know, he was one of these guys who would switch his investments from one to the other. You know, if it dropped to half a percentage point, he was out of there. You know, he'd always be researching the best deals, the best savings accounts and all this stuff. So he knew this inside and out. And I'm sure you would have known about the levels at which inheritance tax kicks in. There's no doubt in my mind he knew all of that stuff. But anyway, we looked at the estate that he left behind. And I say it was about $500,000 to $600,000. Now, all that money, he'd already been taxed on it, obviously, because he worked hard all his life and he couldn't invest any money until he paid tax on his income.
Right.
But the government taxed it through the inheritance tax. And they took from that estate to the tune of, I can't remember if it's this is the dollar or the UK amount. I think it was in sterling, it was £145,000 that they took out of that amount. So about 100 and whatever that is, $180,000 they took out of the total estate. Just creamed it straight off the top, all the hours that he'd put in. And people, you know, I'd shared the story and people, oh, well, he was stupid. He should have known about different ways to invest and so on. Well, he did know all that stuff. And like us, he thought he had, you know, 10, 15, maybe even 20 years left in the tank. And he was going to be doing, so that was probably his living expenditure to really go out of life in style. But instead, he'd been penalized and we, his family, were penalized for his hardworking nature and his thrift saving and investment mindset. He's been penalized out of the wazoo. He would be better not working for however long that $150,000, $180,000 took him to earn, right, on a teacher's side. You'd be better just retiring early and saying, no, screw that. I'm not going to earn that money or invest that money and put it into business and try and help the economy and create wealth and create jobs. No, I'm going to keep hold of it because if I earn any more, when I die, the government's going to take it. So it was a real smack in the teeth, and it was kind of just the final straw for me of just thinking, this is bullshit. This is out of order. You know, and it wasn't about the money for me. I don't need the money. I'm fortunate. I've been, you know, running my own business for 20 years. I've got plenty tidied away myself. You know,
but it's theft.
Exactly.
And this is what gets me. Like, it's almost literally grave robbery at that point. And it's absolutely maddening to hear this. And like, this is. So I know there's like some arguments for this, right? You have some people say, I've actually heard someone come to me and say, well, you know, the person's dead, so, you know, they're not going to use this anymore, so the money should go to someone. Yeah, it should go to who they're going to inherit it to. He worked his life off to, you know, to give this to his children and his family. And then some other people come along and say, oh, but, you know, that's not fair that, you know, we have to work for our money and somebody else gets to just inherit it. But it's like, okay, forget about the fact of like your life's a little bit harder than somebody else and that this is theft. Think about it this way. If that person does not inherit the money that they were supposed to inherit, That means that they have to work harder and they have to work their ass off, which means they're going to be competing with you for your job, which means the employer is going to want to pay less because there are fewer people who are, because there are more people who are working for that same job. And you are destroying that economy instead of giving someone a way out so that, you know, as more people get their way out of this working slavery system that we're in, as more people get out of that, you might be next. But when you pull somebody else back, when it's your time to get out, someone else is going to pull you back. And we need to stop thinking that, because we're heading as much as this sounds like an imaginary utopian reality, we are heading to a world where so many jobs are going to be replaced by automation. And if we're sitting here fighting over those jobs against these machines, then meanwhile, the government has taken everything and the government owns all of the land because they've taxed everything from us. We're going to be perpetually working our asses off just to pay the government rent for land that they acquired through theft. And that's when people try to justify these inheritance taxes because their life is still a struggle. That's what they're fighting for, is to make sure that everybody's life is always a struggle. And it's unethical, it's immoral, and that's not the way that we should be. That's not the direction we should be heading.
Yeah. Well, to me, it's a direct assault on the will of a, you know, in both senses of the word will, on the will of the person whose money it was. You know, that was never the government's money. He had already paid tax on that money. It wasn't like he'd illegally squirreled it away or whatever.
Right.
His dying wish was that it went to his family, primarily to my sister, because she's in a slightly tricky situation, and he knew that, and he was trying to provide for her, and I'm sure that's why he carried on working into his later years specifically for that purpose. Although now it has been, you know, a lot of that has now been wiped out. But what I found even worse, and a real kind of punch, you know, kick in the teeth after everything, was that when you go through the probate process here in the UK, so you go through all the legal stuff, getting a lawyer, wrapping up the estate, the very first thing to happen, the very first thing that happens super, super quick, is the Inland Revenue take their money. It happens so exceedingly quick. It's just disturbing.
Right.
You know, you're trying to process the event, the loss of a loved one. You're trying to move forward. You're trying to, you know, close the chapter. Obviously, you're trying to get the estate wrapped up. You've got all paperwork going on. Meanwhile, the Inland Revenue are chapping on your door saying you can't do anything yet. You know, they're sending letters to the lawyer, sending letters to you. Don't, you know, you're not getting probate here. You're not getting the green light to close this estate and to get your hands on this money until you've paid us. That's the first thing that needs to happen. So they literally, in this case, I'm sure it happens every other time. Obviously, I'm fortunate I don't have any other experience of this directly. But what happened is the Inland Revenue gets the details of the banks, where the money is, so where my dad's money was. The lawyer has to contact the internal revenue, gives them the details of the banks, and the revenue take that money directly from the bank. So of course it was going to go anyway, the government were going to get their hands on it, but it doesn't even, there's not even a courtesy of, let's get this pot together. Okay, yes, government, you assholes, you have this amount. They take it at source and they get paid first before you're even allowed to close the estate and process the whole transaction. It's just, it's disgusting. It's disgusting. And yeah, it was really, as I say, it was a tipping point for me to really sort of move in this direction and start, you know, speaking about it and being more active and, you know, trying to open people's eyes to what's actually happening here.
Man, and you know, something else that you said earlier too about how some people are like, well, he should have known there are ways around this. You have to put your money in certain, like, that is like, yes, okay, fine, that's the world that we live in, but that doesn't make, oh, so you're saying that some people who are smarter shouldn't be robbed and some people who aren't as smart should be robbed. It's okay that they were robbed because they weren't smart enough to know where to put their money, or they forgot to cross the T or dot the I on some paperwork. And so now, so it's perfectly justified that they should have to give all the, no, it's, if you're in the same situation, it doesn't matter if you're smart or stupid, or if you didn't have time to get to the paperwork or any of this stuff, theft is theft. If you're stealing from somebody, you're stealing from somebody. It doesn't matter if they're a fully abled person or a crippled elderly person, you're stealing. And this is like, yeah, we need to wake up to this. And I know there's like so much resistance to that because everybody wants, you know, they want their roads and they want their government services. And yeah, but I think at the same time, people just don't realize that they're paying 100 times more than the cost of all of this, because these politicians are taking all this money, sticking it in their own pockets and, you know, doing whatever they want with it. And we're just all getting screwed and robbed. And it's absolute nonsense.
I know. Well, you know, they don't have any money without our money. It's, you know, I know it's an obvious thing to say, but for every dollar, you know, that a government has is a dollar from a person like you or I, you know, so why are we giving it to them? You know,
we're going to spend $1 trillion on this. What? Like that's, we can't even comprehend how much money that is. And that's money that they took from us. It is absolutely insane.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was the other thing as well about, you know, what happened with my father's estate was just knowing that, I mean, the money, obviously the money on the face of it, that was one thing. The way that it was dealt with was another. But just knowing that, well, what's that money? What's going to happen to that money? Like, honestly, what in the ass? Like, where's it going to go? What's it going to go on? It's going to go on things that he's got no say in, obviously, because he's no longer here. It's probably going to go on policies that he totally disagreed with anyway. It could be used for wars or who knows what. He never signed up to that. He never agreed to that. You know, he would never have given a green light to that. It's just disgusting. It's horrible. It's wrong on so many levels. Fair enough. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm definitely never, ever arguing for taxation. But if you're alive, at least you've got a chance, you know, at least you can fight, at least you can get out of there, at least you can refuse, at least you can say, no, I'll go to jail, or screw you, or no, I'll go under the radar. But not if you're dead. What are you going to do? You've got no say. That money has been stolen from you. It's been used for heaven knows what that you never agreed to. Could be things totally against your principle. It's definitely against your will and what was written in your dying will and testament. It's just inherently wrong and immoral on a number of levels.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about this this ebook, StopTheft.net.
Yeah. So obviously, as a result of all this happening, I really kind of, you know, dive into libertarianism and kind of look back at my life and how I've been, you know, this entrepreneur for 20 years on, you know, been running an internet business since the year 2000. And, you know, I've paid millions of dollars myself personally in tax over the years, and I've been hit with, you know, huge tax bills. I've tried put stuff offshore, and I've been, you know, they've come and found me and you know, clamped down on me for that kind of stuff. So I've kind of been living the lifestyle, but I wasn't really aware of libertarianism. It wasn't really a thing in the UK, as I say. Nobody even knows what it is over here. But when this happened with my dad, it was coincidentally at the same time I'd been introduced to a lot of the liberty movements on Facebook, particular liberty memes group that kind of got me into this and was sort of showing me the power of voluntarism and how we can help one another and we don't need the government to intervene and screw everything up and the so-called look after us. So I started getting more into it and, you know, doing more research, studying more and obviously following people. I'm really good friends with Tom Woods. Tom Woods and I have released some products together on the internet, with training people how to get their own business set up online. And so all these things started to sort of filter through, percolate in my brain. And I thought I could just took the decision. I've got to get out there. I've got to start doing something. So I've got a podcast going. I've started putting ebooks out, free ebooks that people can get to get this information. So the Stop Theft one is a huge, huge amount of research I've done. It's for US on how to stop taxation, how to stop paying tax or pay way, way less tax than you're paying. There's 27 ways that I talk about in that report. I've yet to find anybody that's gone through that and not found an something new that they've learned. I've even had a tax accountant go through it and was like, yeah, it's, you know, it is good stuff. So yeah, people can go get that over at stoptheft.net. You can go download that. It's just an ebook. You've got the 27 ways in there, a little bit of background about me. And then also you'll see a link inside the ebook for my podcast. I do a daily Liberty podcast as well. Obviously you're a guest on today's episode as we're talking, just went out to my guys today. So today's like Dan Behrman day. I've been putting out Dan Behrman memes all over Instagram, my Facebook, awesome. And pictures of you as Winnie the Pooh saying, oh, taxation is there. But yeah, that's where people can go if they want to find out more or get that ebook, stoptheft.net.
Awesome. Yeah, and that was a fun episode that we did. So I saw that this morning and I've been posting that around too.
Cool.
So all right. Well, I guess if you have anything else you want to plug, now's the time.
No, I'm done plugging, man. I think I'll go and get some shut eye here and
awesome.
Go and get some rest and take on a new day tomorrow, new podcast, a new government overreach to fight.
Nice. All right. Well, keep up the good fight. It's awesome having you on the show. And hopefully everyone can see that, yes, taxation does happen around the world, but people are starting to resist it everywhere. So the whole movement is growing. I've met people all around the world, in Africa and Australia and Asia that are just, you know, starting to realize that the government's no good. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next few years, but the movement is continuing to grow and more people are learning about this. And I think we're heading towards really awesome times. So,
yeah, no, I agree. Keep doing the good work and, we'll speak soon.
Awesome. Sounds good. I'll see you next time.
Right. All the best.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.